KCSX Big Jim's house. It's 7:39. Big Jim, Aaron V, and Bob Seger in studio. Hi, Bob. How are you, buddy?
Good. How are you guys?
Good, man. So, I knew you when the album is out, and for you to come in this morning, first of all, it's the best Christmas present ever. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
And we've been having fun with this. I mean, it is. We knew this was coming, and we were waiting for it, and we would get the little teases and stuff. And it was funny to me that, like, I know, Aaron, we had, like, a little teaser thing of the three songs. Mm-hmm. And we heard the title track, but it wasn't until we got the whole product that we really understood the scope of it. We had a discussion a couple weeks ago, Bob, about albums you have to listen to in their entirety. Remember, we were talking to, like, with some of the guys from the Moody Blues, and we were talking about Live at Budokan and certain albums. I think you need to listen to this in its entirety because it really has a flow to it. You put a lot of thought into this.
Oh, yeah. We did it here in town, actually. Well, we recorded it everywhere else, but we mixed it here in town. The engineer is Gerard Smerick down at Yesian, and he's been working with Aretha and Anita Baker for years, and now he's working with Gary Clark Jr. in New York.
Who's amazing.
Yeah. And so he was only available on the weekends, but every weekend that he gave me, we would work our tails off, you know, and mix this record, and yeah.
Well, you know, the station has a connection to this as well, because the back, you have the picture of Glenn Frey Drive.
Right.
That was something that we had got behind, you know, with CSX, working with Gary Briggs and Jim Ellison, the mayor in Royal Oak, to put it over Don Darrow.
Yeah.
It was just strange how that all, you know.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful tribute, yeah.
But to see the photo on the back, we didn't even know until Mike and the guys brought it by that was in the back there.
I just drove by Catalpa, which is the street Glenn lived on.
Really?
Yeah, when I met him. Yeah.
So yeah. I knew you went obviously dedicated to Glenn Frey, and we were watching it was the Eagles documentary, and they were telling the story about how Glenn was telling the story about how he was going to go out with you on tour, right?
Oh, yeah.
Was he going to be like a real member of the band? Did you have him like pegged in, like you're going to be a full time member with me?
This was really, really early, and we wanted to start a band together. And the drummer on Ramble Gamble Man is named Pep Perrine.
Yep.
And so both Glenn and I played keyboards, and we played guitars, and we would take turns playing keyboards and guitar and bass. It was a threesome we started out with.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, yeah. And my manager, Punch, said, "You can't do it." And I said, "Why?" He said, "You and Glenn are too headstrong. You'll kill each other." He's right about that, because we remained friends our whole lives because we weren't in the same band, you know, because we were so opinionated and so aggressive in our ideas and stuff and ambitious.
He tells a story in there about how, like, Glenn's mom, when she met you, went, "Nope, you're not going out with that guy."
Oh, yeah.
You, Bob Seger, scared off Glenn Frey's mom.
Oh, yeah. I had really long hair. She probably immediately said, "Drug dealer." You know? You know? Of course, the picture on the album is me. That I didn't even have a beard or anything when I was 20 there, and that's when I met Glenn. That's the year I met Glenn.
You're so baby-faced in this, Bob.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great photo, man.
Yeah.
We had a listener, actually, it sent us a video of Glenn. It was film. Mm-hmm. She was 16, and I think she lived in Birmingham, yeah. And they had booked Glenn Frey to play her garage.
Oh, wow.
So there's no sound, and I think he's doing Shout. You can tell by the machinations and stuff. And even then, he's just this rail of a kid. And he is owning this garage. There's maybe 20 people there, and Glenn is just all over the place.
He was such a joy to be with, too. He had a great sense of humor, and we hung out real, real close for about 2 years. And then Ramblin' Gamble Man hit on the charts, and I went away to do my long tour for that record.
Right.
And then Glenn moved to California. That was the next thing I knew, you know, And I think he stopped off with J.D. Souther in Texas or something and started Long Branch Petting Whistle and then moved on, of course, to the...
And the rest is history.
Yeah, yeah. So I lost track of him for about 4 years until 1972. And then, boom, there it was, Take It Easy on the radio, the first time I heard it. And said, "Yeah, Glenn, you..." I knew his voice immediately.
So, but Glenn's always told the story. Glenn had told the story a couple times about you... Was it driving? And you kind of told him he needs to write his own stuff.
Well, we were driving, listening to the radio.
Okay.
Yeah. And we were watching. We weren't driving that time. That's another story. We were actually at the Fifth Dimension, and we were watching the Rationals, which was a band back then.
Yeah.
But they did, they were doing their song Respect. They did their own version of Respect, and they're singing away, and the crowd's loving it. And I said, and Glenn said, God, these guys are good. I said, yeah, they're really good. I said, but they don't write their own songs, you know? And if you don't write your own songs, you know, I don't know if you'll ever be that big, you know? And he said, okay. And we started talking about that. And that was the, I said, you could never be compared to anybody else if you write your own songs, you know?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And he loved that. And so, yeah. Started writing.
I want to play the title track for my new UN.
Okay.
I want to ask a question. As people listen to this, I've always said, like, now that you've put in context, when people listen to this album to understand where you were at when you're writing these songs. So when you wrote I Knew You When, is this something, when did you write this? How often?
I think I wrote it in 98 or 99. We recorded it in 2002. It was just really a song about remembering all the music that you loved growing up and having heroes that you kind of discover yourself. You know, do you ever, you know what I mean? You'll hear a song on the radio and you kind of discover it yourself and you go out and you buy the record. Maybe it's not big yet or anything.
Bob, you do realize you're talking to Detroit. Everybody listening. Yeah. Yeah, that would be you, Bob. That would be you.
Yeah. And, but at any rate, I Knew You When, obviously is I knew Glenn when he was 17, I was 20. And we both had bands, and my manager, Punch Andrews, managed both of us, you know? And like I said, we took a flyer at putting a band together, but Punch said, you guys are gonna be, you're gonna be better in your own bands. You'll stay friends, too.
The title track there from I Knew You When, we were just talking about the Laura and Barbara and them, and the vocals, the backing singers.
Yeah.
You know, such a part of it, but they soar in whole album, man.
Oh, yeah. They're terrific. I'm so lucky to have them. So lucky. And they really put a lot into this because they, two of them, Laura and Sean, knew Glenn for a long time too. And
why do you know that?
Yeah, yeah. And we're very close with Glenn. So they put their all into this album. They're singing their brains out on the whole album.
No, Aaron, you've been watching like some of the social media. You guys can join the conversation as well on Facebook. Yeah. You can hit us up on Twitter. You can text 248-398-WCSX. I mean, you know, we don't have Bob Seger in studio every day, so it's a good chance to talk with him. But you were talking about we're getting questions all morning.
John wants to know if you really attended Lincoln Park High School.
No, that's confusing. I played down there a lot.
Okay.
I used to play, I can't remember the school, but it was in Allen Park. But I had a band in 1972 for a very brief period of time, about 5 months, called, they were a band named Julia, and they backed me up for about 5 months. And so I spent a lot of time down there with those guys. They were younger guys. And I think, I never lived in Lincoln Park.
No. But that was the band show,
right? I attended,
right?
Ann Arbor High.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Darren wants to know if you ever played a small club in Sault Ste. Marie, because there was a myth about you playing a club called The Back Door up in the Sioux.
Well, I can't say I didn't. I know for sure I played Northern Tech or something?
There's Northern Michigan University.
There. Yeah, well, that's in Marquette, but at Sault Ste. Marie, I played some university there. Yeah.
Lake Superior State?
Yeah, Lake
could be. LSSU.
It could be, yeah, it could be that one.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, I played there.
I always love the stories. Aaron, one of my favorite ones that I've heard about you and Nugent in a cave. Was that in Nebraska? Where the hell was that place? You guys played in a bowling alley cave.
Oh, you love the name. Festus, Missouri. Boy, you want to have a sound nightmare. Try playing in a cave that's about 40 feet high, and all the walls are stone. I mean, you can't hear anybody. You can't hear anything. It's just a, you know. But it was a lot of fun, you know, doing it.
What was Ted's advice to you? Just play louder?
Yeah, well, I was really depressed because of the venue, and he said, yeah, just play. You know, you'll get over it.
Power through.
Yeah.
We have to apologize to you as a show. We were at your sound check for the Palace. We took some listeners there.
Oh, yeah.
And it really made us uncomfortable because we couldn't applaud after you were done with a song. So because we didn't want to interrupt you. You're doing a sound check. And we were told, like, just respectfully, right?
Oh,
you can't clap. And we were in the back there. We had listeners there, Bob.
I was doing the air clapping.
Right. I'm telling you.
Oh, I'll be darned.
It was the hardest thing. The listeners were, like, holding their hands together like magnets going, oh, dear God, I want to clap. And I can't clap.
Yeah.
But you were looking around the palace that day, and it seemed like you were really taking it all in. It was cool to watch feel the vibe.
Well, the last show ever at that wonderful venue, you know.
Yeah.
I wish somebody would buy it. Actually, my manager thought about buying it, but because he loves the sound of the building, and so do I.
We call it Punch's Palace?
Yeah.
All right.
The Punchless.
The Punchless. So you did Pine Knob. We did we did that one. And then, of course, we have to talk about another venue. Of course, you remember watching this on Sunday. What was a couple weeks ago? Oh, the Silver Dome. Only the Silver Dome wouldn't go down the first time.
Yep.
Lions fans disappointed one more time on a Sunday.
I went to the game where Barry crossed 2,000 yards.
You were there.
Remember that? You had one season where he had to over 2,000 yards. Yeah. I was there. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
What was it like playing in the Silver Dome? I mean, because we had Jimmy Page on, and he described it as like walking into an airlock.
Similar to playing in the cave.
That's a great analogy.
You know, back then... it was like we didn't have enough PA. We didn't know, you know. It's like I remember when I saw the 8 days a week with the Beatle thing, and they said we had no PA and we're playing Shea Stadium, and they had nothing, and all I hear was screaming girls, you know, because it was there were 40,000-50,000 people in Shea, and they had no PA to speak of. They didn't know what they were doing.
So you're in there in the Silver Dome, and you just had to, again, crank it up to 11 and see what happens, right?
Yep. That's about it. Yep.
We were at the Pine Knob show this year, and it was funny. When you came out wearing that shirt the second half.
Yeah, I almost wore it this morning. I thought you'd get a kick out of it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
People went Looney Tunes, Bob.
Yeah.
And what shirt are you referring to?
I still call it Pine Knob.
Yeah.
There you go.
Walking out, and everybody went nuts. That was a great show. Maybe you get punched to Pine Knob, too.
Yeah.
Punch Knob? No, that doesn't sound right.
I think that's still running, though.
The same people is.
that own the Caesars own that. Yeah.
It was fun to watch all that. But let's get back to I Knew You When, the new Bob Seger album, and obviously a tribute to Glenn Frey.
Yeah.
You came in with stuff this morning.
I just came in with one song that I really want you to hear, and I hope I don't cry before the end of it. But then maybe you can follow it with I Knew You When, or with I'll Remember You. That'd be great.
So
two in a row.
Now, what I've got here is Live in Dublin, Glenn Live in Dublin. If you can set this up for us, what we're going to listen to.
This is during Glenn's solo career, before the Eagles reformed back in 94. And it's July in Dublin, Ireland. And he's got a bunch of musicians, and he does this old Irish folk song. And I think you're going to really like it. Oh, my God. I played it for my wife last night, and she teared up. I might tear up as I listen to it, too, because it's so beautiful. And it's just a tribute to his great artistry.
Here it is. Glenn Frey, Bob Seger in studio.
Well, it's called Wild Mountain Time.
We're talking about Bob Seger in studio. I Knew You When. The new album is out now. And
you can hear him. It's kind of like I guess the whole crowd knew the song. It's kind of like one of those drinking songs when they're in the pub, you know, that they do.
It sounded like one of the traditional Irish folk songs.
Yeah, it's a traditional Irish folk song. And I thought it was a great choice, you know.
When Glenn became Glenn Frey, the Eagles Glenn Frey, and you knew him. And we always hear the stories about you and Glenn, you know, like going out towards like working, you know, helping with songs, you know, towards the end, Heartache Tonight, things like that, which the Kennedy Center honors, Bob.
Oh, thank you.
For you to do that, and I can imagine not how important that was to get it right. And you nailed it. You nailed it.
I was driving Vince Gill nuts. He was right next to me, and all we had was a curtain, and I sang it over and over and over, and he says, "Haven't you got it yet?" And I said, "You know, to me, the greatest tribute you can do to somebody is to sing it as close to them as you possibly can. I wanted every nuance exactly the way he sang it. Of course, it's my voice. It's different. But I just practiced and practiced my brains out. And, it was I got a really nice thing about 2 days later when we finally got home from Washington, D.C. And Henley said, "You killed it." And, boy, I was moved, and it, you know, and it was really sweet of him.
He was your student in a lot of ways, wasn't he?
Yes, a little bit, because he was younger, I was older, and we both played guitar, we both played piano, and we both wanted to be songwriters, and we were both lead singers. So, we had a lot in common. He actually took classical piano, Glenn. He's a much better piano player than I am. Yeah. Yeah, he started taking lessons when he was four. If you listen to like The Last Resort and all those great songs with the pianos on them, The Sad Cafe, I Can't Tell You Why, that's Glenn. That's Glenn playing piano. He's a really good piano player.
So in the midst of all this that's going on, in the midst of when Glenn became the Eagles Glenn, and here you are, your career, your world is taking off, just exploding too. Mm-hmm. How much joy did you take in watching Glenn become this worldwide icon? The Eagles are going to be one of the most beloved bands ever, worldwide.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was such a thrill, you know, because and Pan was so good. Like I said, the first time I heard Take It Easy, then I heard Witchy Woman, and then it's like, holy mackerel, these guys are great. And they all sing, and Glenn, basically, they'll tell you, he was the leader of the band, you know, basically. Yeah. He was very... they were all so good, Bernie and Randy and Don, that he took a lot of their advice as well. It was a band, but he was kind of like the prime mover. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We got another question from Zach, who is a big fan and wanted to know, what is the meaning of Fire Lake?
Ha ha! Well, the Eagles are singing on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the meaning of it?
Well, it's eights and aces, so it's not euchre. Okay.
Who wants to live out on the edge, I guess, you know, sort of, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you don't often see a lake burning, you know, so. You might see a river burning in Cleveland a long time ago. So I guess it's kind of a metaphor for living on the edge, you know. And I was really into motorcycles, and I played it for, it's a really left field lyric, and I knew what it meant. Who wants to break the news to Uncle Joe? You remember Uncle Joe? He was the one afraid to cut the cake. In other words, don't be afraid to experience life. You know, some people just stay home and go out there and risk things, you know. And of course Glenn did that, and they heard it and they loved it, and so they asked me if they could sing on it. I said, heck yes.
You know, no.
Oh, what a great day that was. They worked hard on the harmonies. They were perfectionists. Yeah.
So did you get nervous like when the Eagles are coming to studio? You seem like such
no.
a relaxed guy.
No,
you're just having fun, right?
They
that's
were
what
my
I mean.
Friends. Yeah, they were my friends, and it's just like Glenn has done solos on my songs before, guitar solos. He sang background with me on Against the Wind. He's playing guitar on that one.
He's on Ramblin' Gamblin',
yeah,
isn't he?
He's playing the lead guitar which answers the piano on Against the Wind. That's Glenn. And Till It Shines, he's playing the guitar solo on that.
Oh. So let's get to the song, I'll Remember You. We're talking with Bob Seger, obviously, in studio, CSX. It's Big Jim's house. Big Jim, Aaron V, producer Ryan this morning. Again, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Oh, my pleasure.
The song, I'll Remember You.
Mm-hmm.
The first or second time I listened to it, I went, oh, my God. The bridge, the middle of it, mm-hmm. Don Henley could be doing that.
Oh, well, thank you.
It has an Eagles feel to it. Were you even aware of that when you were doing this, or...?
Well, I'll tell you, when I got to the bridge, I was basically singing to an audience of one, Cindy Fry, you know? And, so I wish I had the words that would take it all away, and nobody does, you know? I mean, basically, at the memorial, Cindy said he was the love of my life, you know, and his daughter was crying and telling everybody how much she loved him, and she was actually doing some comedy stand-up. Of course, her dad was so funny. I don't know if you ever met him, but
met him once years ago.
Oh,
years
he was,
ago,
he was
we interviewed him, but yeah,
funnier
yeah.
than heck, and a great sense of humor. And it was interesting because his daughter had the great sense of humor in the family. You know, yeah, his wife does too. We were at the Kennedy Center, and the first time I saw him, it was Deacon and Cindy, and of course Taylor, his daughter, and his youngest son Otis, who was about 15 at the time, and. She ran up to me and she said, I know what Glenn would say. We're at the White House. She said, uh-oh, the gypsies are here. Hide the silverware.
And Bob Seger in studio with us. I will remember you off and you win the new CD, obviously a tribute to Glenn Fry.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying, though, in the middle of that? It sounds like something, and I mean that in the nice way possible.
Like Henley? Well,
Henley would talk some of
that
kind of...
That's a great compliment.
Yeah, you hear it there.
Don's a great singer, yeah.
How are you? I know we had to stop the tour for a little bit. You look great. You sound great. I mean, how are you feeling?
it's frustrating. I'll tell you, I'm not allowed to play or sing or lift anything over 5 pounds until January 20th.
They do the same thing to me at church.
But it's kind of maddening, you know, because I can't work out. I can't do anything. But I'm just trying to be real patient, and that's the recovery period. I guess the bones have to grow back right in my neck, you know. And there you go.
Yeah. Good. Well, you sound great, because I know we had actually the Bob Seger fan club, 20,000 people on Facebook. Mm-hmm. That was what they wanted to know. They love the Runaway Train tour, and they're looking forward to it. So you sound great, and I'm sure we'll hear more about that. But
yeah.
So many well wishes coming in on our.
Want to ask me another question?
Bob's
ready.
All right, here we go. This is actually one of my questions too, and somebody brought it up. Rick in Livonia, he wanted to know where exactly was Main Street, and I've always wondered this for years because it's one of my favorite songs you've ever done, and it could be anywhere in Michigan. You know, like for me, I grew up in Mount Clemens, so when I hear that, I think downtown Mount Clemens. But where was Main Street?
It was in Ann Arbor, and I used to walk around as a youngster at night. It was so safe, you know, and everything. And the actual street that the place was on was called Ann Street, which is on the north part of the main street of downtown Ann Arbor. And there was a club there, and people would dance in the window, you know, and it was kind of a smoky blues club, you know, so I wasn't allowed in. I was like 13 or something, you know, but they had some really good looking gals in there, I remember some of the bands. I'm really going to date myself. Washboard Willie used to play there, but there were a lot of blues bands from Chicago who would play there too, you know. So it was great listening to that music out in the street and trying not to be shooed away by anybody.
We had somebody ask on Facebook. They said, "Who was your first kiss?"
Oh, geez, I do know. I don't want to embarrass her.
I don't think it's an embarrassing thing that you'd be saying, yeah, kiss school. Bob Seger.
Yeah, it was grade school, and there's a gal named Ann Cleveland. She was a really sweet gal.
Isn't it funny, the things we hold on to, the memories? Yeah. It's like you'll always remember the first girl you kissed.
Yeah.
When I wake up in the morning, Sofia Vergara, but that's a totally different discussion. Anyway, 8:13, Bob Seger in the studio with us, the new album, I Knew You When. I was going through some of my notes here, and I was thinking about Blue Ridge. We're going to get to. We want to play that.
Mm-hmm.
This
is my favorite song off of the new album.
Blue Ridge.
I have played it like probably 50 times in a row. There's just something about it that just it immediately grabbed me.
Oh well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. You know what I love about that song is the drummer. That is Richie Haywood, and so we did two takes of it, and I looked at him because he is beating the crap out of the drums, and it's 3 hours and 3 minutes and 50 seconds, and he's playing that pattern, which is really hard to play.
It is intricate.
It really is. And I said, "Are you okay?" He said, "Oh yeah, man. You want to do any more?" I said, "Man, I think we nailed it on both takes." So he was a wonderful drummer and so creative to come up with something like that.
We're going to play it for you next. We'll take a little break. Bob Seger in studio. We'll come right back with Blue Ridge off the new album, I Knew You When. And like you said, Aaron, this is one of the cooler driving songs. Not today in Detroit, because you're probably slip sliding all over the place. Mm-hmm. But when you can get some open road, this is pretty cool.
This is about, actually, I wrote it about, I'm a huge Civil War fan. So I wrote it about the Civil War. Yeah. Looking back on the Civil War, I go to all the battlefields and everything.
I didn't know
Antietam,
that.
Antietam, Gettysburg. I've been to Chickamauga, you know. Mm-hmm.
I took a picture of the mailbox there so I could say I had a Gettysburg address. My friend's like, that's the stupidest thing ever. Bob Seger next. Don't go anywhere. A little inside story. Moose Brown, Jim Brown's a good friend of mine and part of the band, and he tells a great story that it was Strut and a couple of different ones. You taught him how to play it properly. Right? Going down. Right?
Yep.
You don't know. He thought that was the coolest thing in the world. He's like, Bob Seger just taught me how to play one of his riffs. That's the coolest thing in the world.
And the other thing is Rob and Moose, when I taught him how to play the rhythm on Hollywood Nights, because they weren't doing it right. And I should... I'm sorry. You know, when you play 50 years, you want to hear it the way you play it, you know?
You have to go down, right?
And they said, well, there's a lot of back picking, a lot of... Yeah, it's complicated. It's complicated. But they said, yeah, that's it. And they practiced it and they got it right.
Well, I played Guitar Hero, so I kind of know how to do it now. Yeah. Not the same.
Now, earlier we were talking about people that, like, Big Jim had mentioned, you know, you're around the Eagles and you're not nervous because, you know, I would have freaked out. Is there anyone who you get around and that you actually do get nervous? Like any other musicians or?
No, not really. Dylan, maybe. You know, but I what I find, I don't know why, but I always get everybody's best side, you know, when I meet somebody new, you know, when I met Elton John, when I met Keith Richard, everybody's really nice, you know, and Dylan, same way, you know.
Do you think, Bob, because your music is, I wouldn't say autobiographical, but you do tell a lot of stories about yourself. I think anybody listening to this right now feels the same way that I do. I feel like I know you through your music. I know about you. 12 hours out of Mackinac City, you stopped in a bar in Minnesota. I mean, I know that whole thing. We all relate. You turned the page. You got mad, and there you were. You tell me a lot about yourself.
First time I met Dylan, the first thing he said to me was, I just did Fire Down Below in Australia.
What?
You just come back for his Australian tour. I said, well, thank you. He said, I love that song. Yeah. So that was pretty sweet.
It is. It's always interesting. It is. I mean, we know you. Everybody listening right now, we feel like we know you. And then I going back to this album, that's what kind of hit me, was this is something deeply personal to you. Your love for Glenn Frey and his family is apparent, and we all know this, and the impact that he had on your life and his passing.
Yeah.
This feels like you're sharing something that I'm not even sure that I feel like I'm listening to a private conversation with you and Cindy and the kids sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you, he was like my best friend outside of the band in music, you know, my best friend. And I would say my second best friend outside of my band was Henley. You know, I knew Glenn longer than I knew Henley, about 6 years longer. But it was just... we saw each other all the time. I would play them stuff. Do you like this? Is this good? And they would play me stuff. What do you think of this? You know, all down through the years. Yeah, we did that.
So when he was here with the Eagles, I remember going to the show at the Joe.
Yeah.
As a fan. And I think everybody felt the same way. When Glenn passed, we all went, what?
6 months later, it was a shock. We were watching the show, my wife and I, and they did some stuff that they don't ordinarily do. And one of my favorite ones was Whatever Happened to Saturday Night.
Yeah.
It's called Saturday Night from Desperado. And while they're singing it, my wife looked at me and said, okay, that's it. Sorry, honey. The Eagles are my favorite, all-time favorite band.
Thanks, honey. Appreciate that.
Yeah, during Saturday Night. That's a beautiful song. Yeah.
Is there an Eagles song that... for you? I mean, that Saturday Night's the one for you?
There's two that really kill me. Glenn doing Old 55, Tom Waits song.
Oh, I know it.
And Henley doing The Last Resort. That's absolutely sensational. The lyric is so amazing. And I really love Randy doing Try and Love Again. That's the closer, actually, on Hotel California. Those two songs, Try and Love Again and Last Resort. And I think they're just wonderful. But, Glenn doing Old 55. He actually had a 55 Chevy. He called it Gladys.
Wait a minute. Did he really?
He really did. In 1972, that was the car he and Henley drove around in L.A. And
I was looking for
55 Chevy named Gladys.
And then... it's, you know, when we listen to Hotel California, too, like you mentioned earlier, I Can't Tell You Why, and some of the, just, I mean, there's so much.
Yeah.
There's so much.
Yeah.
What'd you think about to see Deacon up on stage with Vince and them?
Oh, it was great. I was there the first show. You know, Walsh called me up, Joe, and he said, you got to come for Deacon's first show. And I said, sure. And he said, will you sing Heartache? I said, of course I will. And it was just such a thrill, you know, because Glenn has taken his father's place in the band, and it's just, it all makes sense, you know, and the Eagles can keep going on, and he does a great job, Deacon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Vince, too. I mean, to have Vince Gill.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable there.
You know, I got one song up there. I'd love to play it for you.
What's that?
If you don't mind. Because it kind of reminds me of how much Glenn loved his family and loved his wife. And
yeah.
It's called When It's Love. And this is Vince Gill. If I can introduce it, you got it on the thing there?
I got it loaded up right now in the old Perfect. In the old radio okay. vault.
Well, this is one of the guys that replaced Glenn in the Eagles. And I think this is my favorite country song of last year.
Big Jim's House, 8:33. Big Jim, Aaron V, producer Ryan, and ladies and gentlemen, Bob Seger in studio. Yeah. Brought that with you, Vince Gill.
Yeah.
What an amazing song, Bob.
Oh, God, I love that song. It's my favorite country song of last year. Yes. Yeah.
I've always been a big fan of Vince, though.
He's a soulful singer. You ever seen him live?
Yes.
Oh, God. He's amazing live. Yeah. And I'm so thrilled that he's with the Eagles. I wonder if he'll try that high note on, what is it? Don't blank out, Bob. Someone talk.
Oh, okay. I can't tell you why.
No. The Randy song.
Take it to the limit.
Take it to the limit. Yes, oh, thank you. Well, see, your moment.
There you go.
No, it's going to happen. I'm 72.
I'm not, hey, and man. I don't remember anything. So.
Hey, man, if you wear your jeans tight enough, Bob, he can hit those notes.
I think he can pull it off, if anyone can.
Yeah. Oh, Vince's got a high voice. Oh. Yeah, yeah. And I would love to hear him do that. I remember the first time I saw Randy do that song was at Nassau Coliseum on Long Island. The Eagles were playing out there. And Randy hit that high note, and the crowd just went crazy. You know, and it was such a beautiful moment.
Was there a song for you, like, through the course of the years, Bob, that, like, one you went, man, okay, if I'm doing this live, I got to take a step back and get after this one. One that there was a note you had to go to.
Well, Heartache Tonight, that's all high notes. Oh, man, that's a hard song to sing. And people ask me, why didn't you put it on the record? And I have a very simple answer. I always wanted to be a Glenn song. I never want another version out there, you know?
Really?
Yeah, I want Glenn that wanted to play the Heartache with Glenn forever. I don't want to have a second version out.
What was it emotionally like when you were done singing that at the Kennedy Center?
It's draining because I really love the guy, and it's my tribute to him. And I did it three times. I did it at his memorial, you know, about 3 months after he died. And then I did it at the Kennedy Center. And then I did it for Deacon's first show. You know, and I said, that's it. I'm done doing Heartache Tonight. But it was just a great chance to... You know, give it all I got for an old friend. That's it. His memory.
As we look at the album cover, obviously you said earlier this morning, Bob, we were talking the album cover. You were 20.
20.
When you first time you met Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
We see Glenn Frey drive in the back. We open up and read the lyrics and stuff. I said this earlier, and I think it bears repeating. To understand where you're coming from with this music and how personal it is to you, mm-hmm. as a fan, I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's insight into something that, you know. We all deal with loss in our life, and for you to share this with us, that because we were all, I mean, the day Glenn passed was one of those days that you just, I remember talking, you met our program director, JT, we were on the phone, I think it was just when we heard the news, and we went, no, you just couldn't process it.
Yeah, I got it from Joe. Joe called me, and every all the Eagles were calling different people, and Joe happened to be the one that called me and said, he passed at 2 o'clock today, and it was about 3 when he called me. Yeah, it was tough. It was a tough week.
Mm-hmm. So this is cathartic for you, right? I mean, this album was cathartic for you.
I think so. It was difficult to do because I felt there was a lot riding on it. I remember when I first approached the idea of doing it, it was at the memorial, which was 3 months after he died. I think it was around April or May of 16. And I of course, I talked to Cindy first, and I just said, this is what I want to do. You know, I got this song, and I told her some of the lyrics, and I said, and I want to do a tribute album to Glenn. Is it okay? And she said, well, I'm sure it'll be okay in your hands. And she was confident that I could pull it off, you know.
So I didn't know that.
That's what I started working on it then. Started thinking about it. That was the first song, I Knew You When. And I said, well, this just fits to a T because I knew him before anybody did.
So when you released Glenn's song, when we got that, I remember it was posted on the website, right? Mm-hmm. It was on BobSeger.com. We got it and we played it that day.
Oh, yeah. That I called Cindy the night before that came out. And I said, this is just a song I wanted to put out for the anniversary of Glenn's death. And I put it out the day, January 20th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We got it. Can we play it?
Oh.
Is that too much for you? You tell me, man. I got Runaway Train. I got Heartache Tonight. I don't want to do that. No, I don't want to do that to you. I don't want to do that. But
You know what I would love to play?
Tell me.
From this album is I would love to play another Richie song that he's playing drums on. I think this is so strong. I think Glenn would have loved this song. It's called Forward Into the Past. And the girls sing the brains out on it. And it, yeah, this is it was done that in that same era as I Knew You When, late 90s.
Okay, Forward Into the Past
forward
off the new...
Into the Past.
Got
Richie
it right
Hayward
here.
Died in 2010, and...
I wish you could see Bob in the studio right now, man.
Today
that was
is
awesome.
Like the greatest day ever. I have an air band in the studio with Bob Seger.
I can't help myself. You got Leroy Parnell on slide, and you got Michael Henderson, who went out with Dire Straits. They just got into the Hall of Fame. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And Knopfler is a great guitar player, obviously. He would bring Michael Henderson, the last guy who plays on that song. He's playing the baritone, the really low guitar.
That's what I was going to ask. That sound is unreal.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. He's just he's a reckless, wild, creative genius, you know, Michael Henderson. Everybody knows him in Nashville. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What a great song. Bob Seger in the studio, the new album, I Knew You When. Big Jim's house, Big Jim, Aaron V, producer Ryan. And, Bob, thank you so much for coming in this morning. This has just been a blast.
Been my pleasure.
You were so much fun. It is... we've been getting so many questions, and we're getting calls and people listening from all over the country.
Yeah,
we got folks listening in Texas and Tennessee. Come on, bring it, Aaron.
Oh, there's all sorts of questions on here. A lot of people just want to wish you well in there.
Oh,
like,
well, thanks.
That's what most of the comments are. Like, I'm such a big fan. Glad to see you looking so good from the people that were watching the Facebook Live. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just wishing you happy holidays, and they're just...
Well, the same to all everybody out there. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I just celebrated my 25th wedding anniversary in our first song.
Mine's next year.
There it is.
There you go.
So our first song was Real Love.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, we couldn't get Freebird, so we figured, what the hell? So seriously, that was our first dance, our first song, Bob.
Michael Campbell's playing all over the Real Love. He's playing guitars on that. And I mean, it was amazing. He came in, did all the acoustics, all the electrics, everything. I just sat back and said, go. Mike Campbell of Tom Petty's band.
Yeah, what a strange year it's been, isn't it? You think about it with Petty and Glenn. I mean, just a strange year.
And Greg Allman and been a tough one. Oh, Petty was wonderful. He was something else. I got every album he ever made.
Well, there's one of the greatest pitchers in rock and has, you know, you and Tom backstage. Was it Pine Knob?
Yeah.
Just laughing your ass off, man.
Yeah.
It must have been a joke or he just saw you and lit up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he came to my house once and he saw a picture in the basement of that I had of him and me. And he said, I've got the same picture in my house.
Really? What? Really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. Yeah. Yeah. I have the same exact picture.
I've always thought Running Down a Dream could have been one that you did.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Well, I tell you, if you want to hear something inspired by Running Down a Dream, that's where I took my inspiration for this song. It's The Highway, you know, on this album.
Let's grab it.
Yeah.
You know, now that you mentioned that, I can hear it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I definitely, I always loved that song. And I said, I want to do a song at that speed. And, you know, it's completely different. It's minor key and everything. But I was inspired by Running Down a Dream for this song.
Big Jim's house, thank you so much for coming in this morning, Bob.
Yeah, I wanted to just say one thing. When I was at the Deacon Frey show at the Dodger Stadium, I told Cindy about this song. And I said, just between you and me, The Highway, it was written... It sounds kind of corny, but I was thinking the Eagle Way. And this is like Glenn talking, not me, you know?
See,
and
this is what you sharing this morning, the stuff you've told us as we listen to this entire thing. I tell everyone to listen to all the tracks, but now I feel closer to it when I'm listening to the music. I understand, you know, not just the words, but the thought process and what was going into this.
Behind it,
Do you think Glenn, as you were talking about some of the lyrics in The Highway too, do you think Glenn becoming a solo artist made him even a better part of the Eagles?
I think so. You know, the last album that they did, Long Road into Eden, you know, I could tell they'd all had their solo careers. Don, Joe, Glenn, even Tim.
Yeah.
And they sounded freed up. You know, they tried some dangerous things on that album. And I think having a solo career definitely was good for all of them.
Well, you as I mean, your success over the years, Bob, you think about it, How often do you feel like you're competing against yourself?
That's all you're competing with. You know, I mean, you know, there's a great line I saw on a PBS special, and it said, an artist's greatest enemy is his past. You know, is his an artist's greatest enemy, what was it, is the stuff he did in the past.
It makes sense. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, anytime you release an album, we're going to hold it up to some,
yeah,
you know, and, you know, especially here in Detroit, and when you talk to people that we have such a, I'm going to say viral. I mean, it's a very powerful connection to your music.
I got it now. Our artist's greatest enemy is his history. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the Eagles, you know, were free from their history. And I love the four songs they did on
Hell Freeze is over. I liked when they did some of the studio stuff too.
Thank
yeah,
you,
I like. I see.
Thank
I'm the one.
You.
There you go.
You
this one from Bob. I like Get Over It. I always like Get Over It. I thought that was a great song.
Oh, Get Over It's wonderful. That's a J.D. Souther song, and it comes out in 2007 when they released the album. You know, and it's like, it's the Eagles.
Yeah.
You know, it just sounded. It's like they're back. You know.
Well, we're going to go see them. We're going to see you. And I'm glad you're doing well. And everybody was, you know, folks listening all over the world right now.
I have one more message, though, I got to get to.
You got to do it.
Yep. Somebody got in touch and says, oh, my gosh, Bob, I named my son Seeger. He's so amazing. He has autism, yet he knows all of your songs by heart.
Oh, sweet.
I have so many videos of him jamming to your music. He's 9 years old and would love it if you could send a shout out to him. His name is Seeger Dibley.
Seeger Dibley. How you doing out there, young man? Well, thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great, wonderful day.
You just made that kid's year. That's awesome, man.
That would make my whole life if I was nine.
Nine.
Thanks for the music. Thank you. For this.
Thank you, guys. It's nice to just come in and shoot from the hip. Yeah. I'm going to wrap this up with a Henley song. And I really think this sounds like he's almost singing to Glenn on this song. And I love it because he talks about the Eagles beginning. And I think it's just such a beautiful song. And so, yeah.
This is Take a Picture of This?
Take a Picture of This.